The chivalrous Red Riot strikes again. My name's James. I'm joined by Dylan. We're going to be breaking down the newest episode of My Hero Academia, the UA students versus the League of Villains. Dylan, how you doing today, man? How you feeling about this episode?
I'm doing good. I have mixed feelings about this episode. I mean, overall, it's good, and it aligns to the manga. Like, everything is perfect there. I just have a problem with this part of the story in general, but we'll get to that, because otherwise, it's really, really good.
Yeah, there is definitely some deeper discussions we're going to be going into as far as this aspect of the story altogether. But yeah, I think it's overall, it's I think we're keeping that consistency of like quality episodes one after another. So yeah, no. So before we get into the really big discussion of it, I'm just going to give you guys a quick breakdown of what happened in the episode if you haven't had a chance to check it out. So once again, the UA students are faced with dealing with Makiha as he's on his rampage heading towards Shigaraki. Momo hatches a pretty seemingly good plan of a combination of all the UA students' quirks between Class 1A and Class 1B. I think Mudman coming in really clutch for this seems to be a huge asset. Everything is looking fairly good. They are able to get Makiha to the ground, but Makiha being Makiha is able to rise up and kind of thwart off most of the attempts to sedate him with the canisters that Momo kind of crafted up. Between him and a combination of Dobby, it looks pretty grim for the students because Dobby is able just to use his fire with Maki's breath. But Mina actually is able to get through with her quirk going at full viscosity, so the flames actually don't hurt her. That being said, though, as Mina is basically on her way to throw the canister in Maki's mouth, she is reminded that Maki is actually the student that caused a decent amount of trauma towards her in her early years and kind of throws off her game. That being said, though, our boy, Kirishima, Red Riot himself, propels himself through the air, throws Mina out of the way, gets smoked by Makiha, and is still able to Spider-Man his way back up his limbs and get a canister into his mouth. We then turn back to Shigaraki, who is firing all cylinders, despite the fact that he doesn't seem like he's all there coherently. And he's making a beeline for Aizawa, recognizing that he is the big reason that, as I think it's been really a big theme in the previous episodes, that Aizawa is the reason that Shigaraki has not gone completely unhinged. That being said, though, a combination of Gran Torino, who takes a pretty bad blow in this fight, Ryoku, Endeavor, and Deku, they're basically able to get him to a standstill, but he's still able to get off a delete around, which hits Aizawa's leg, and that's how they end the episode. So we're going to be talking about a couple things here. We're of course going to begin with the Makiha fight and really this like culmination of quirks that we see to try and attempt thwarting him on his path. Dylan, where do you want to start with that?
I guess let's talk about the importance of this fight, because like I want to talk about like I guess the Kirishima Mina full circle storyline here.
Yeah,
because as you said, back when they were high school students or middle school students, Mina was able to stand up to this random passerby who ended up being Makiha, and Kirishima wasn't. He wasn't able to go and save anybody in this circumstance. He was very afraid. And because of that, he ended up becoming a hero and wanting to pursue being a hero. This is kind of like the full circle of before, whenever he wasn't able to kind of leap out and be a hero, he was able to do that here. Now, the problem with this, though, is they made Mina look awful. Like, yeah. It was a moment of where you should have let Kirishima shine without letting Mina fall. Because Mina already stood up to him once. Like, why would she then, like, be worse off? Why would she have, like, negative growth here? And this was a problem in the manga as well. So it's not like this is anime-only specific or anything. Like, when this came up, a lot of people were talking about it, of like, hey, like, essentially, you took something away from this character, which we both know Horikoshi is iffy on how he writes his women characters. So, like, yeah. This is just, like, another thing. It's like, come on. Like, you didn't have to do that. You could have just let Kirishima shine here. So I'm wondering what, like, you're thinking about this. Because that was, like, my biggest gripe, I think, with this segment overall.
Yeah, no, I think it is definitely one of the biggest issues with this one little arc of the story, especially because it already painted Mina in like such a positive light in regards to like confidence and stuff like that. But And I'm trying to remember in the manga if they did show that flashback of basically her standing up and then her going to her friends. They did? Okay.
Yeah. The flashback was like remembering that moment because, like, I think this is where they're supposed to connect for us as the viewers of, like, hey, if you haven't caught on already, yes, this is the same person.
Same kid. Yeah. Yeah. And basically just to like show back and to show that Mina was actually like very scared as well. And she was actually just like confident, but like, you know, they, you know, just so afraid, but you're still powering through it sort of thing. And then, yeah, but she's done that once already. So to have that memory kind of go back and then just kind of, yeah, like really erase all this character progress. It seems I hate to say it, it's like typical Horikoshi writing women, but it really is like this. I think this is really the beginning of when people are starting to knock him a little bit for how he writes his characters. Women okay. characters specifically.
So I'm not a writer. Maybe James is a little bit of a writer. Regardless, we are not professionals here.
That's true.
What I would like to do, though, is I would like to pitch how the scene could have been done better without screwing over a character. I'll start. I'll pitch my little idea. We'll see how you think. Maybe we'll workshop this a little bit. Let's just turn the scene into an actual good scene here.
Okay, so all right.
I'm thinking this is how it plays out. Not going to go into super, super dialogue or anything, but essentially... the whole crew gets there and maybe Makiya yells something out. And in that moment, Mina kind of freezes out on the ground and she's like, hold on, is that? And then like right before she's able to like fully make that connection, Kirishima steps forward and goes, you know, you stood up to him once, we can stand up to him again. And then they tag team it together, both standing up to him. Like, I don't know, like some crazy aerial dynamics, throwing the thing back and forth until it finally goes into his mouth. And yeah. Then we end the scene there. That way, we have a moment of Kirishima being able to back Mina up, which he wasn't able to do originally. Mina still being taken aback by recognizing this is the same voice, which she should. She should actually, like, kind of pull back a little bit, because that's a weird thing of, like, something very traumatic in your childhood randomly coming up in this ultra-stressful situation. Like, she should have some reaction to it, but it's able to not pull her back into negative growth. And then it's also just a good dynamic between the two, because... They're supposed to be the pair that, like, obviously people ship them together, but they're supposed to have some history. They went to school together, like, they have that history together, so it makes sense for them as characters as well.
Yeah, I think having that conversation on the ground would be fine, but you could even have, I think, the dialogue or of Mina kind of, like, recognizing who he is as she's, like, propelling through the air. I don't even think you really even need to, like, retcon the scene that much. And basically her powering through it and recognizing and then just having it slip. Like, I don't even think it needs to be that crazy where, like, he's the causation of the, like, the missed throw. The missed throw can just happen because it's a super stressful environment. Yeah. And then Kirishima doing the exact same thing. You know what I mean? Mm. It still shows that she is aware of what's going on and it doesn't take away from her or anything like that. It's just like, at that point, it's not a character issue. It's just a bum throw, right?
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's several circumstances that you could rewrite this scene. And it would, again, it wouldn't take anything away from Mina, which, I don't know, it's just a weird character to kind of step, like, dial back, you know what I mean? It, like, because she's always been so confident. And they mm-hmm. even had that scene with her and Mineta, of all people, of her really being like, it's going to be fine, we can get through this sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it is a bit of a fumble, but it's not, it's hopefully this is like one of the few last ones we have.
Yeah.
So that really, like, the Maki fight altogether, though, like, you do see a lot of like again, going back to Momo actually, like, showing that she is, like, quite capable of coordinating and like thinking through things, like the dynamite post him getting up is, like, essentially what really saved that situation, right?
Yeah.
And I think that really shows, like, I guess on character growth side, that Momo, it can be quite, like, even if she is like, oh, there's a potential my teacher just died, oh, I am coordinating not one class but two, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She can have a lot of, like, forward thinking and stuff like that, and I think it really shows that she is actually getting past those previous issues. I think we've kind of covered on other episodes.
Yeah, she's a class rep, right?
She... Isn't she the backup to Ida?
Or is Ida's the class rep then, right?
Yeah, I think Momo's the backup.
But regardless, she is, like, one of the two. She is in this, like, leadership position of the class. And this really feels like she's stepping into that role of being kind of a leader for them, being able to be that strategist. And like, it makes sense also with like her quirk of like being able to just like pull out the random things. Like yeah. she is a strategist here, and it really feels like it, which is great.
Yeah, it really does feel like there's so much forethought into what her game plan is that she kind of covers all her bases, which I think is great. I think that's super cool. And like the one issue I guess I have with that scene, besides of course what we talked about with Mina, is that Mount Lady's essentially on his back, like crushing all the League of Villains against nobody. I find it really weird that nobody thought to do something to try and like pull her off while she's prying his mouth open, sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. The way I kind of justify that is, for the longest time she was like kind of like down on his like leg, grabbing onto it.
Yeah.
And then when she finally gets onto the back, it's kind of like it's happening so quickly that nothing can really happen. All of that, and also like I guess like imagine if you were in that situation of where you're on essentially a running mountain that's constantly moving. You basically just have to be holding on almost the whole time. Like there's very little that you can do. Which the only thing that we actually see done is by Mr. Compress, which. Insanely cool hand, right? Just like shooting out like all of the things from his fingers. Incredibly, incredibly cool. But like it makes sense because he's holding on and then he's able to just pull his hand up really quickly and shoot.
And shoot.
So I think it kind of makes sense. Even Dobby, right? Whenever he had to light the forest on fire, he had to like get off of it. He got off of Makia, right?
He had skimmy up and then like get next to Makia's like almost like on his shoulder kind of thing.
Get into a very specific position to be able to do it. So that's kind of what I'm thinking for that, and kind of makes it sort of okay, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens from that, because he basically just went to like full assault mode, like after like his jaw like went up over his head. He's like all spike screw and shit like that. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like he's almost like he's kind of a Nomu as well, because like with Dobby's model, like he talks about how he has an abundance of quirks that really keep him on the battlefield for as long as possible. So I'm kind of curious about that, whether or not he's like another like almost no move, because he has like dialogue and stuff like that, especially like later on. Like he goes from just being like yelling and screaming to like actually having like a cognitive sentence, which is kind of weird. So
yeah, which is really interesting, because like now there is. There's multiple class of Nomu. So we have like the Nomu that like, I don't know how to describe it, except they look like Nomu. Like you have that classic look. And then you have like the Shigarakis or Nine from the movie, or like, I guess Makia now, of where they look human, but they clearly have more quirks injected into them. And then obviously Kurogiri is like somewhere in between, of where like, in retrospect, yes, does look like a Nomu, but like obviously obfuscated because of the smoke stuff, but also like can talk in like almost coherent sentences.
Yeah, so like I think it might really redefine like what our definition of a Nomu is, you know what I mean? Because is Nomu just somebody who has more quirks at this point and that's really it? Or is it somebody who's like artificially created plus they have a bunch of quirks, right?
Yeah, like, but like what is the artificial creation? Because we know that like people can be turned into those lower class of Nomu. We've seen it before, like with what's his name from like Vigilante, like a lot of the vigilantes we get the boxing guy. So we see that happening like quite a bit. So like, what is the difference between them? So I think that's something that we don't quite know. But like clearly there is like a spectrum of Nomu, and like Makia, Nine and Shigaraki are probably on the far end of like almost like I would even call them the perfect Nomu class, of where they were able to get all of those quirks, their bodies were able to handle it, but they're very, very sentient. Like their sentient scale is like all the way there. As opposed to the high ends, of where as long as they have like enough time to charge up or whatever, then it kind of seems like they start to get almost sentience, but not quite there.
Yeah, and we really haven't seen like I guess a Nomu of that, you know, the classic look plus the amalgamation of quirks really reach that full high cognitivity.
Yeah.
You know, free thinking and stuff like that, right? They've always been really in that development phase. So I know that was really down the rabbit hole, so we're gonna actually circle back to I guess who somebody else who you could probably consider a Nomu, who is Shigaraki, because this fight with him is just getting like it's just getting more and more batshit like as we go on.
Yeah.
Give me your thoughts on how this is going.
Okay, so where do we even start? Okay, so Shigaraki, first of all, is insane right now. Number two, he's doing this without his quote unquote his quirks. So I think that also like gives us a lens of what's going on with him. Of like, he got 100% punched in the teeth, and he like just bit through that. And that's no quirk. So like, obviously, whatever he was like done to him like by the doctor with like all the injections and stuff has made him incredibly, incredibly strong and resilient.
Yeah, like the sheer durability of him and the strength is like it's like Superman levels if we're gonna put it into context sort of thing, right? So it's pretty crazy to me that just by that alone, like there's some degree of augmentation that is not quirk related. It's just normal augmentation. It both exists in the universe and two isn't affected by Aizawa at all, which means it's not a quirk. It means
it kind of is because it's the same way that like Aizawa can't look at Spinner and turn his quirk off because it's his body. So I that's the way I kind of am looking at it, of where it's a quirk, but it's like of the types of quirks that like you can't turn off.
Yeah, that's the which is crazy for quirks that give you speed, strength, and like you know resilience, right? Those are quirks that you can usually disable, and now they've just like you said become like a part of his body, which I think is really. That's really crazy as Shigaraki is a character sort of thing. And it's like, it's really bad because like we see, he just wears 100% full cowling in the mouth. And it's just like, I'm just going to bite down on this. Like, we don't really see where it was aimed either. I'm assuming it was trying to like break his arm to disrupt the, like where the bullet was coming from. But yeah, for him to just like wear that in his mouth is pretty, pretty insane to me. Also like, I mean, in episodes in the past, whenever we've seen Deku go 100%, it usually spells bad things for him because his body's still probably not ready for it. That being said, he has done a metric fuck ton of conditioning since then. Yeah. So do we think there's going to be like a lasting injury from this, or do you think we're just going to like power through it kind of thing?
I think it depends on where the fight really ends. Since we're still like really in the heat of it, I think it totally could be the case that like he has an injury. I don't think it's going to be from this. I think if it is, it makes sense that he is like, they're really going to double down on the Deku's going, like he keeps punching or something. And then that's where the injury happens rather than like, this is the injury in the middle of the fight.
Like the one-off thing, right? Like it doesn't seem like it. Yeah. That's totally fair.
I mean, he did have a ton of conditioning, so it could be the case that like 100% is just fine. Probably not. Probably not though, because it's very strong. But like, probably somewhere close is okay for him.
Yeah, I think you're right there. We'll see if it gets more attention, because I think it is going to be one of those things where if we circle back to it, it's like, okay, it's probably going to be relevant.
I did also want to talk about the fact that we have two characters die probably in this one. So one being Gran Torino just sacrificing himself, and the second one being Aizawa, which. He's not dead, but if he's shot by the quirk erasing thing, he's functionally dead.
His effectiveness is non-existent at this point. So, yeah, that's pretty crazy to me. Especially, we get a lot of like insight with Gran Torino, and I do like he is a really good character because he is very like he's older, he is fucked up before, and it's really nice to see that you know. And you see him, you really kind of admit it in the sequence, like they created the problem, like him and Shimura are like the reason why they're there kind of thing. And you see that acceptance, right? I think that's, I don't know if we're going to close the loop on Gran Torino, I think this is like the perfect time to do it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. He's a good character. I think he filled the role that he needed to. He was that like kind of in between mentor for Deku, taught him some new things, gave us that link to the past. Now it's like, yeah, I think he kind of ran his story here. So it makes sense to have a really good sacrifice for this old hero.
Yeah. Plus we also need to talk about like prime Gran Torino. That like, dude, my man is like, he looks sick. Like,
yes. Why did he shrink 5 feet?
You do when you're old, you shrink, right? But I like he went from being like having like 6'4" like Giga Chad meme to like
yes.
this old dude. You know what I mean?
Just a tiny little guy.
Just a little. Oh my god! All right, so yeah, I think we kind of covered everything we wanted.
I did want to double down on the fact though of like the Aizawa shot, because
yes,
I think it makes sense though, because they're really they doubled down on that. Like even last episode of like, hey, if Aizawa's not here, we're totally screwed. And I think Aizawa creates the problem of why doesn't he just erase every bad person's quirk?
Yeah.
And so every single fight now, we're going to have to deal with the fact of like, oh, why isn't he just erasing his quirk so he can have the fight easier? And then this kind of solves that problem. I think it solved the same problem as like All Might, right? Of All Might being super strong, you had to kill him or nerf him in some way, which they end up, you know, he can't, you know, be All Might anymore. And it makes sense because the question would always be, why isn't this person doing their OP thing now? I think it makes sense here. And it's definitely like a very tense moment. I think they executed it fairly well, too. I'm excited to see what the follow-up is going to be for it, because Aizawa's like main, I guess, contribution to everything right now has always been the mentor for the kids, which in this circumstance of where he doesn't have his quirk, he can still be that mentor to them. So he still has his importance to the story without having his OP ability, which it's like the best of both worlds, right? Well, I mean, assuming that like next episode isn't going to be him immediately getting his head cut off or something.
Yeah. like and unless you like kill off the character entirely, like his contribution to the character development of the students is still like very, like he can still very much do that, right? Yeah. He has all this experience and everything like that. And he's already proven himself like to be like quite an effective mentor with like, I mean, like if you see most of the tutelage that Aizawa has done previously, it's never been really with his quirk anyways, right? So his quirk is just all this other stuff. So I'm really happy that I like my hero is definitely trying to address the fact of the classic anime trope of like, this character has a super OP power, why aren't we just using that to fix everything, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'm excited for next episode, as I think we've been saying pretty much every episode this week or this season. So that's great. With that though, we are moving into the Plus Ultra Award. If you're new here, or you know, you want to hear me give the same rundown again, Plus Ultra is the award that we give every week for a character we think in this episode went Plus Ultra, went beyond. And this, we have done everything. We have done meta, like people who have done the episode. We have done characters. We have done like ideas, everything. Dylan, give me yours.
Easy. It's my man, Mud Man. Easily went Plus Ultra. Has the most broken ability possible against Makia. Like, without him, everything is over. Everything's over. Everything's screwed. He came in clutch with the best ability.
I really wasn't expecting Mudman. Like, I agree. Like, he just didn't have the moment that he, like, they focused in on him sort of thing for him doing it. Our boy's just, like, the silent, like, hero. Contributor.
Yeah,
he's here. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's love just him. Doing his thing.
Love Mudman.
Yeah. We love Mudman here. God, I was gonna give it to Shigaraki for just going like full batshit without like, you know, and like just like mentally checking out, because you get that really crazy scene of him was like with Deku's arm in his mouth, the eyes are white, like he is just, and like the scene where he's like over Gran Torino, like I think it's so cool to see this character just constantly ascending and like blowing past his limits, right? So I'm gonna stick with Shigaraki, but I do 100% acknowledge Mudman.
I will say the scene with Shigaraki like punching through the dragon lady was incredibly gross.
Yeah, because he's like, and he just, oh man, it's good. Yeah. That's what we want. But that does it all for us this week, guys. Check us out on Class 1A Pod. It's where we do this, we do Demon Slayer, we do Blue Lock, and we're probably gonna be adding that repertoire soon. And you can also check us out on any podcast platform. We also do just audio there if you want to take us with you. So that's all for this week. We'll see you all next time.